Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my guest is old friend Masaki Miyagawa. Masaki has a lot of information to share about the financial markets, the precious metals markets, much more, geopolitics, and with his own unique blend of an understanding of the esoteric as well as geopolitics and the financial systems. What better way to ring in the new year, Happy New Year, everybody, than to bring in Masaki again. So without any further ado, welcome back, buddy.
Hi, James. Happy New Year. And we're off to a bang, a big start to the new year, because Washington flipped Venezuela last night, and we're off to the races.
Off to the races. I haven't got any details yet. You mentioned before we came on that there's some suggestion that the Chinese, communist Chinese in Venezuela, were taken by surprise, apparently, that a number of their intelligence people or their staff, embassy staff, are, you know, perplexed, bewildered, alarmed by, understandably, by this latest turn of events. What's your perspective on early days yet, as they say in Australia, but what's your perspective of what just happened in Venezuela, the abruptness of it all, and what have you?
Well, Trump, it's really the American Israeli establishment, right, has been focusing on Venezuela. He used the excuse of drug cartels and drug trafficking to intervene, and they've been blowing up boats that they said were drug running operations. But really, the key is Venezuela has the largest oil deposits in the world, bigger than Saudi Arabia. And China gets, I think, around 30% of their oil from Venezuela. So that's significant. So the two factors of cutting China's supply lines and then securing it for the U.S. is a major factor. And basically, the current administration, they're reinstating the Monroe Doctrine, which is basically America controls North and South America, and this is our sphere of influence. Just like Russia's sphere of influence is Ukraine, and China is basically dominating East Asia, right? Like Japan has their space, but you can see all the countries that border China, including South Korea, right? Heavily infiltrated and influenced by China. So that's the way it's shaking out. But that basically happened overnight. They started bombing Caracas, and I think they captured Maduro. Didn't take more than one day. In fact, it was less than one day, right? But America's good at military campaigns. Not so good at economics. The Chinese really, they run manufacturing. They have all the rare earth minerals, and that's the way that they're going to fight. So it's less obvious, but in the end, if you pencil out who has what on paper, China should not be underestimated.
You mentioned Japan a moment ago. If I understood it correctly, I came across a news article about how they're basically just disavowing the whole non-foreign military adventurism part that was written into their, essentially their constitution, after the peace treaty was formed between the U.S. and Japan. We saw gradual encroachments in that direction. Was it Gulf War One or Two? They provided naval support and what have you. So, what do you see on that score? It's we're starting to see some more bellicose statements, flinging around between countries there in East Asia.
Well, we talked about Japan on a previous show, and it's kind of shaking out like I thought, because we talked a lot about the immigration. They're tightening up the rules, but they're not stopping the immigration. Takaichi, the new prime minister, she said something like, "We're going to ensure an orderly process." That doesn't mean stopping the migrants, that the cheap labor that big business wants, like Japan Inc. wants, but they are tightening up, but n not only on social rules and immigration rules, but they're also tightening up on loopholes that foreign entities like China uses to infiltrate Japan. I don't know if you know this, James, but Japan does not have any anti-espionage laws. So you can go into Japan and do whatever you want. It's totally legal. But they're starting to tighten up because it's clear what direction the world is heading in. And so I think China, they were doing a lot of aggressive talk, but I think even China was a little bit shocked at the speed at which Japan made a turn. I don't know if you heard about this, but Takaichi, the Prime Minister of Japan, was asked about Taiwan, and she said that Taiwan is critical to Japan's security. And if China invaded Taiwan, Japan would have to act. That's just the facts, but to say it out in public is something new. So, in response, the Chinese ambassador in Osaka posted on X, Twitter, that she should have her head cut off. So, this is an ambassador, right?
You mean
So,
the Japanese prime minister lady for that tweet she put out, or that announcement rather, the Chinese ambassador in Osaka wrote that the prime minister should be beheaded?
yeah, either he was encouraged to post that, or he knows what what the Chinese government likes. It's basically Xi Jinping. So they've tried to create a lot of I guess tension, but Takaichi's public support went up. It's among young people, it's like more than 90%. I think among the general public, it's like 75 or something like that. So I think China was trying to cut down the support for Takaichi, but that didn't quite work. But the Chinese diplomacy is very crude. Like if you compare the Russians to the Chinese, it's night and day. Because I think Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, he's always calm, cool, collected, same as Putin. It's like no emotion. You can't really tell what the Russians are doing, and they're always I mean, they're masters at diplomacy. China's the exact opposite, where they say outrageous things, they try to provoke, but actually acting and doing something is it basically it's a lot of it is an act. I don't even know if you could call it diplomacy, but I see a lot of parallels with modern China and Imperial Japan 100 years ago. So I wouldn't underestimate China, but the fact that they're coming from a position where they say things about the spirit of the Chinese people, and it's almost by power of the will that they can defeat their enemies. This is not a good a good position. You always want to overestimate your enemy, then underestimate your enemy. But we're coming to that point. I mean, basically, the invasion of Venezuela kicked it off in the first week of the year. Of It's not World War III, but it's an economic Cold War. Like, you do have hot wars, regional wars, but America and China are not going at each other directly. Or you could say America, Israel, and China are not going at each other directly. But there's proxy wars. There's Ukraine, Nigeria. You've seen that Trump's talking about helping the Christians in Nigeria. I don't think he's trying to help the Christians. Nigeria has a large amount of oil. And I forget the term, but it's like sweet crude oil. So you don't really have to refine it. You only have to refine it a little bit compared to, say, oil in Venezuela. They have a large reserve of oil, but it takes more processing to turn it into gasoline and so forth. But this is the way it's looking like, economic Cold War. And one of the key factors is who owns and controls the commodities. So that includes the rare earth minerals, which are used in a lot of applications, but specifically electronics and magnets. Magnets, basically, China controls that market. Even if you were to find a deposit, mine the metal out, you still have to refine it, right? Well, China owns the refining facilities. And these kind of factories, you can't build it in a few months or a year even. The knowledge it takes and just the equipment, it could take several years to build a plant. And also, the byproducts of the manufacturing are highly toxic. That's one of the reasons why we let China handle it, because they said, sure, we'll be the rare earth minerals processor. And the contamination and the pollution, well, we just let it run off into the river. America, it's a lot harder to set something up, these manufacturing plants and processing plants, because we have environmental regulations, right? Well, China doesn't have that problem. So control of the commodities is key. But basically, we're going back to mercantilism, where each country has to have gold and silver, and control over materials, like real things. And I would say that the BRICS Union, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, they control the commodities. The West controls paper. And so it's reversing a trend that's been going on for, say, at least 100 years, and we're going back to revaluing real things.
Interesting historical parallels too, because in the past, when the Seven Sisters, so-called, the oil cartel got together, forget the name of the agreements back in the day, the Red Line Agreement, Athenkerry Agreement, etc. What they would do is say if there was some other country or player, corporation in the oil business that wasn't a part of the Seven Sisters network, and they started pulling oil out of the ground, crude oil, the response from the majors was always, we own the refinery system. You can get it out of the ground, but you can't refine it. Oh, by the way, we control the markets. So not only do we have, the refineries, which are necessary to convert what you pull out of the ground, but we've got the oil tankers, we've got the pipelines, we've got the distribution networks, we've got the markets. And like what they said to Mexico way back when is, let them drown in a glut of their own oil because they can't bring it to market anyway. They can't even refine it on their own. So what you're talking about is a similar dynamic. But in this case, it's China that controls the rare earth minerals, which is driving this whole advanced economy. And, of course, they're taking it to another level with AI and digital twinning and all that stuff. Another interesting parallel you made, or what came to mind when you were telling me all this, was when a country is deprived of its resources, they're going to take whatever methods or measures necessary to obtain those resources so they don't become an international backwater and turn into a pre-industrialized society. So on the one hand, there were key players in the Anglo, what we would now call the Anglo-Zionist empire, kind of Carol Quigley's terminology. On the one hand, goading Japan to be an imperial force 100 or so plus years ago, right, to go after Tsarist China, Russia rather, as a means to an end to eventually break them up later with the Bolshevik Revolution, etc., have an expansionist policy in Asia, vis-a-vis China, what have you. And on the other hand, through the series of embargoes and seizing Japan's financial assets in America, et cetera, that whole 8-point plan laid out by naval intelligence to go Japan into war, one of them was an oil embargo and an embargo of rubber, tin, everything else, right? And so that compelled the Japanese to have to move southward to those resource-rich areas, which they wanted to incorporate into their Greater East Asia Koch prosperity sphere, actually a communist notion that was seeded into that whole expansionist program of the Japanese. So I only bring it up because we're just seeing repetitive cycles, just the names have changed, right? But yes, this whole thing with Venezuela, what are they going to do with that? Does this mean an occupation? Look how big that country is. Now, granted, they must have their puppets and the people that they're going to prop up and install in that country. That one woman, I think they're already lining her up for the Nobel Peace Prize, or she's already gotten it. But she's the one making all those bellicose statements of regime change in Venezuela. And now look what's just happened. So, what do you see the U.S. doing? Because also Michael Yon talks about a lot about because you can't look at this separately in a vacuum. You got to look at what's going on in Panama, other places. Michael Yon and others talk about the deep Chinese infiltration there. One of the main staging points for, you name it, drugs, the immigration waves, etc. Going forward, how is this going to affect Venezuela and the surrounding region, Central and South America?
Well, it's hard to tell in Venezuela proper because, they've been under communism for decades. So the people might actually favor a change to a more capitalistic system. But, I've been to Brazil many times, and I think Brazil comes up in my mind because it's the one of the biggest, it is the biggest country in South America, and their government, I mean, it's in the name BRICS, right? Brazil comes first, and they're aligned with China and Russia, and they have a socialist communist government, right? The PT is with Lula, President Lula. It's kind of a center left party, but basically they're communists. So some of the smaller countries in South America, it's a they'll have a harder time resisting invasion. But a country like Brazil is massive, so it's hard to tell once you start getting beyond Venezuela. But I did notice that in Panama, somebody tore down the it was a statue for the Chinese immigrants and connection to China, the Panama connection to China is basically what it was representing, and somebody tore it down. So I could see America enforcing dominance over Panama because basically, America signed their rights away under Jimmy Carter, and that was a stupid move because America basically made Panama. It used to be part of Colombia. They fostered a coup, and
Oh, Sullivan and Cromwell and the U.S. military, yes.
so they made arrangements with the local elites to create Panama, which was basically nothing at the time, right? It was malaria infested, and they brought it up to a first world standard, and due to that, there was a clause that said America has rights to the canal in perpetuity, right?
It was a form almost of extraterritoriality, the same way the Western powers carved out spheres of influence on mainland China, if you recall. Similar in a way.
So, these routes and waterways, like the Suez Canal, Straits of Malacca, and the Panama Canal, cannot be underestimated. And I could see America easily taking Panama, but be once you start getting to larger areas, it's hard to say what will happen. But I think in general, America probably will have dominance over Latin America. Russia, I mean, pretty much Ukraine lost the war already, and America's pulling out. So America's telling the Europeans, if you want to go to Russia, fine, but we're not going to help you. You have to kind of choose and pick your battles. And China in Asia, I would say that's their sphere of influence. And while Japan, I don't think will fall to Chinese occupation. In the long run, they'll probably have to cut a deal with China somehow. The CCP, the Communist Party of China, they're in major trouble. There's a lot of internal problems in China. So you could even see the CCP fall, but that doesn't mean China's over. They just switch to a different form of government, which could make China an even more powerful adversary. Because basically, what you're seeing is the end of the post-World War II system, the global system. America, Russia, Israel, the CCP in China, they're all products of the Second World War. Like, I think China was formed in 1949, but basically shortly after the war. And that era is over. Like, the time of the boomers is coming to an end. And it's a global reset, and we're about to jump into this next system, right? There's no better way to clean the slate and reformat society than wars. It causes displacement. The old culture dies, and something new takes its place. So, they've been planning this for a long time, but I don't believe that they have it all under control. So it's really, as always, most people will act like it just dropped out of the sky. But the crises that start coming in this year, if you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard and James Bartley, you're more aware than most. So I would just say, just prepare and be aware of what's going on.
Couple of other recent developments I'd like your take on. You were talking about China controlling the rare earth resources, and now what we're seeing in the financial markets and the precious metal markets, this surge in the price of silver and gold. And according to your analysis and others, China seems to be a main player as far as buying up a lot of the silver. Tell us what that means, short, intermediate, long term, and how it's going to impact the already faltering Western, post Bretton Woods financial system, economic markets in the West.
Okay, well, gold and silver were one of the worst investments you could have made in the last 30 years. But recently, it's broken out of a trend. Like, silver, it broke the pattern. Basically, in the summer, I think it was like around $35, and it hit $80 or something like that in 6 months. So it doubled, not from the beginning of 2025, but from summer of 25 to the end of the year, it basically doubled. I think silver was the best performing asset class across the board last year. So, gold and silver have always been money for thousands of years. There's certain characteristics of money because, I'm into cryptocurrencies, right? Well, one of the tests for crypto comes from the characteristics of gold and silver. One of them is durability. It has to be able to withstand wear and tear over time, has to be portable, has to be divisible into discrete increments, has to be uniform. One unit has to be equal to another, and it has to be recognizable and acceptable to everybody. Like, basically, which is funny because there's some videos going around of a guy saying, "Would you rather have 10 bucks? Oh, would you rather have this I think it was an ounce of silver. Whether it was an ounce or 10 ounces, that would be like a $80 coin." Most people took the paper money 'cause they didn't recognize what silver is. But very soon, I think people will recognize the value of gold and silver. Also, it has to be scarce, meaning a limited supply. And basically, it gives you an idea. There's certain characteristics of money, and gold and silver fulfill that, and it has done that for thousands of years. The thing with the last couple decades, well, basically, it started, they started taking gold and silver out of public view almost 100 years ago. It was during the Great Depression, right? The government recalled the gold at that
Gold
time.
buyback, yeah, under FDR.
And then you came to the 60s and 70s where they took the silver out of circulation. And then basically from that point, they switched, the US dollar switched to being backed by gold and silver to being backed by the petrodollar. Well, Saudi Arabia, they backed out of that agreement about a year or two ago. So the US dollar isn't backed by anything except promises now. And okay, I'll take London as a classic example. What does United Kingdom produce? Not much. Not much, as far as I know. What they are is basically it's a money laundering capital. You launder money in London. But besides that, they don't really produce anything. So the Western markets have become paper markets. It's all gambling, basically. And with the futures market with derivatives, you could make bets basically, and it's all rigged. If you're a common person, you don't have a chance. The insiders can they can see all your positions, and they'll just knock you out of your position and liquidate you, right? But especially with the silver market, they've been suppressing the price for decades. And so now there's at least 5 years of demand that's unfulfilled. There's not enough production every year to fulfill the demand, right? So the price should go up. It should have gone up a long time ago, but it's only now that China, India, and other countries are demanding physical delivery of silver that the markets, I guess you call it a short squeeze. It's tightening up, which forces the price up, right? Actually, right now, the price of silver, I think, is $73 an ounce. It's 73 or 74. And overseas, I would say if you try to take delivery of physical silver, it's probably around 100. Taking there's always a little charge once you take delivery, but usually it's within a couple dollars, like should be under $5. That's a pretty widespread. 73. So if it, let's say if it was $10, it'd be 83, but they're charging near 100, and the highest price I've seen so far was in the last week or two of 2025 in December. They were selling an ounce of silver for $130 on basically their version of eBay. So you can tell that while the paper price says $73, try to buy it anywhere close to 73, it's not going to happen, right? So one of the reasons is a lot of the banks have futures contracts that are underwater. Basically, they loaned out their silver at a lower price. They don't have the silver, but to close the contract, you have to get physical silver and close it out. So you have to, the banks have to buy at a higher price than they loaned it out at, right? So they're kind of stuck. So that's the reason the price is being suppressed for them to clean out these bad contracts. Meanwhile, all the silver is going straight east to China. And I don't know if you heard about this, but Thanksgiving weekend in 2025, the COMEX, they said there was a glitch. So they closed down. There wasn't any glitch. They were in danger of imploding. So they just paused the market, right? That weekend, the metals trading desks, like the broker desk, for JP Morgan and other exchanges in the other traders in New York, they moved to Singapore. Why did they do that? Because they want to be where the action is. Because from this point forward, Asia is setting the price. Shanghai has their metals exchange, and it's always higher. It's been higher the last month than in the West. There's the LBMA in London, and there's a COMEX in America. So it's discrediting the validity of the Western exchanges. And when that happens, like I said, remember, London is a financial center. It's like a clearinghouse for all kinds of paper trades. And now, if you look at the London's metal exchange, it's not legit. You're saying it's this price, but if I actually try to buy it, you can't get it for the price they're quoting. There was like at one point, the spread has closed a little bit, but it was up to $10 difference. It would be $10 higher in Shanghai. So you could see why those traders moved to Singapore, because they want to be closer to the action. So no matter what military campaigns America does, China's doing financial war. I mean, we shipped all our factories over to China. We allowed them to steal all the industry secrets, right? The Chinese were thinking a decades ahead, whereas Wall Street, I mean, it's not even thinking in terms of weeks. They're into micro trades where they're looking at blocks of time. It could be an hour, right? And the presidential cycle is every 4 years, so the policies can flip every 4 years. Whereas China, is a dictatorial model, right? And they thought ahead to lock down critical resources, and now the America is trying to play catch up. So, yeah, if you're in the West and you don't want to be taken over by China, just be glad China has a lot of internal problems too, because otherwise we'd be toast.
Well, the fraud is out of control now in America. Just the ability to just keep endlessly printing money, the ability to just keep fraud upon fraud. I mean, where else can they create all these loans to prop up all these fraudulent, like Somali daycare, leering centers, and what have you, right? And all that is just going to make the national debt that much worse, make it that much worse for every single household in America. There's really setting the stage for a financial collapse. How long do you see? Well, like you pointed out, the petrodollar is a done deal. Stick a fork in it, is done, because the Saudis pulled out of that Operation Sandman. I think it was Mike Adams talks about that. But how long can the system sustain itself? Because wars cost money. Expansionist policies, trying to wage economic warfare against the Chinese with the fake currency, the digital currency on the one hand, against an empire that controls the real resources. How long can this model in the West lasts before it collapses upon itself?
Well, I'm hearing that for the US dollar, the end of 2026, that's when you could start to see them. I mean, they've been printing money the whole time. Like they printed trillions during COVID, but the end of 2026, I think they'll be forced to just turn the printing presses on full steam ahead with no end, which would basically tank the dollar. But it could be around 2028 or 2029 because the AI bubble, I think it'll pop around February or March this year. But it will come back, and the AI bubble will finally pop around, I think, 2028. That will, because basically, the Western markets, which is basically America, because Europe's basically a backwater. They are economically insignificant. So it's
Well,
just
the whole
the
continent has been turned into a third world hellhole.
The American market is basically being held up by AI, the AI bubble. And so it'll have a major drop this year, but it'll come back, and that will finally pop around 2028. So it could keep going for a couple more years, but they were expecting this. They've known, I mean, people have been talking about the unsustainability of the Western economic system since the 70s. But you can kick that can down the road a long time. I started realizing this just before 9/11, and look how long it took. It's been 25 years, 24 years since then. So it's been a generation. It takes a long time for a powerful empire to decline. But that moment is here. So in numerology, there's a year count that goes from 1 to 9. It's a 9-year cycle. So you put two and two, you add two and two together, that's 4. And then you have 6, so 4 and 6 equals 10. 1 plus 0 equals 1. So this is a 1 year. Last year was a 9 year. The 1 year sets the trend for the whole cycle. So you could say that this is the reset. You've heard them talking about the reset, right? Since COVID. So this is the start of the economic reset. So they've been expecting this for a long time, and there's things they're going to do, like more restriction online and so forth, transition to digital currencies, could be social credit score and so forth. So I don't think the powers that be are opposed to having the chaos that's going to happen this year. I don't think they're opposed to the process of transition to some other system. But I also don't believe that they totally control it, because once you get to, I mean, it will be difficult enough inside one country, like if it was just America having these changes. Once you expand it to the global stage, there's a lot more unpredictability. And you never know exactly what's going to happen. I think COVID's a good example of that. They got a lot of what they wanted and not as much as they were planning, right? It could have been a lot worse. And that also woke a lot of people up. Compared to the larger population, the people that are aware now, it's small, but it's big enough to cause a problem for the system. So, I wouldn't doubt we're going to have another pandemic, but I doubt that they'll be able to do a lockdown because something that big you can only do once. So, yeah, I said this before, but I would just say I would just prepare because probably from this summer it's really gonna crank up. And even if you don't have a lot of money, you could mentally prepare because just knowing the trends, and this won't last forever. This war cycle, it'll probably be till 2030. So if you know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel and you just have to make it there, that helps a lot. But just even buying some extra pasta and food so you don't have to run out to the supermarket when a panic happens. You remember the lines during COVID? So you don't have to get like 20 years of dried food, but have a little bit just so you can last a couple of weeks so you don't have to wait in line with everybody else, you know? 'Cause the COVID panics, like what was it? People were buying toilet paper, you know, but they didn't think, well, you can't use the toilet paper if you don't have any food. And I can assure you, because it's going to be a monetary crisis, the people in those food riots or the lines out the door at the supermarket, it's going to be a lot more tense and violent than it was in COVID. Because people, once you start to go hungry, the mentality of a person totally changes. Have you heard of that phenomenon where you take a typical domesticated pig at a farm and then you let it out in the wild? It starts to turn into a wild boar. The teeth get a lot longer. They start to get real hairy. It's the same animal, but the DNA gets activated because of the environment. But, people aren't that different. If you think people are acting crazy now, just shut off the power for a couple weeks and deprive them of food for a couple days and see what happens.
You saw a sneak preview of that with the EBT cards, electronic benefit transfer cards, from the SNAP benefit system being shut down during that government shutdown period. A lot of chaos ensued, a lot of theft, a lot of mass looting, a lot more violence. People were getting attacked in the parking lots, pushing their shopping carts laden with foodstuffs to their car. They get hijacked. That's like the highwaymen of the old days, right? So that was the plan B for a significant number of people who they made dependent upon the system with no fallback plan, no plan B other than rioting and other than stealing, right? For some of them, it wasn't a transition at all. So, yeah, if that is any indication, just wait till for 2 or 3 days, perish the thought, the whole system goes down, a bank holiday. Right, like they had in Europe before, where people aren't allowed to withdraw any money from the bank, what have you. Yeah, people are going to start to get crazy. And if you look at what happened in after the Bolsheviks took over the Holodomor, and then the whole Gulag system, you talked about the depression earlier, right? The stock market crash of 1929. This generation or the generations today are in general weaklings compared to the people who had to somehow survive the depression years and then whammo go right into a world war, right? So compared to those people back then, today's latest iteration of humanity, if you want to call that, is weak. Dumb college kids who can't read or tell the time on a analog clock. I never thought I'd see it this bad. In the time we got left, we got a lot to do a deep dive on in the second segment. But your thoughts, just wrapping up this first segment about that, or anything else? Oh, also the fact that they're openly saying that if they have to resort to a draft in Europe, they will, right? So it's bad enough that they got this two-tiered, and I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because it's insane that if, they're not willing to go to war willingly, they're going to be drafted, and that just is going to strip what's left. I mean, they may have to resort to Ukrainian style shanghais and impressment on the streets, like what they do, shanghaiing these 15-year-old boys, hauling them away and throwing them to the front lines. They may have to do that, and then by doing so, if it goes that far, they're leaving the women and the children even more vulnerable to all the foreign invaders they brought in the Coudenhove-Kalergi plan. So your thoughts about that or anything else for the rest of the segment?
Well, there's going to be massive riots in Europe because what young man is dying to fight for what's going on in Europe right now? The governments have shown themselves to be enemy of the people, totally inept. And I can bet you if there's a draft, they're already talking about it. More young white Europeans will be going to the front than brown Europeans going to the front. Gets rid of the problem population, right? I think that, well, when this year is going to start a major economic collapse. So when the material gets weak, the spirit gets strong. So I guess I was kind of referencing that before as prepare, right? But it's a spiritual preparation in addition to the material preparation. I think everything's gonna be on the table. There's no hiding. It was similar in the COVID era. You knew what everybody really thought. If they didn't say it, you could tell by their actions. What, okay, you said one thing, but you actually did another. And that included a lot of people in the alternative sphere. Hardcore vegetarians and vegans, but they were shooting themselves up with GMO created by the Department of Defense. So I think the karmic weight of past actions is also going to come to bear. I would say it's difficult to, in the larger sense of what you want to do, to have, let's say, having freedom. And the most easy way of life is probably a goal for many people, right? But it's difficult to do that on your own. So I would say try to find your tribe, gravitate towards people of a like mind. Now we have the internet, so you can interface with people with similar interests. But it may even come to eventually moving to an area where there are more like-minded people and less authoritarian-minded people. That's a path to success. So I would say that most people listening to this have probably heard these things for a long time, so it's not a surprise, but it's finally here. And that can be a good thing because there are opportunities during these times also. Whenever there's a large movement up or down, that's energy released and the structure breaks down. There's a lot of holes that open or pathways that open because they are intentionally imploding the system. They're blowing the building up like 9/11. But new opportunities arise also. So I would say be adaptable, you know? That's one of the things about people that come from third world countries or developing countries is that I don't know if you've observed this, but in general, they're a lot less about schedule, but they're very good about being in the moment and they know how to adapt. Well, that's because when you're living in chaos, it doesn't make sense to waste energy to plan things because a week out, that's way too far. I mean, the plan may change several times in one day, right? So, yeah, that's about it. And I would say we are going to finally see what's really going on in this world because as this thing breaks down, I think things that we always knew but were hidden will start to come out. And there's that whole thing about the vibration rising and the veils are thinning. I think that's true too. So I'm excited for a new start.
Me
But
too.
I also stacked a lot of silver, James, so I'm ready.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And to our dear listeners and viewers out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.